Welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island change procrastination in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which, according to the Prime Minister John Key, who used to work for the Fed in New York, is good for the economy. Because now everybody can snap up a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb, and they won't have to wait in line by the thousands to get a low-paying supermarket job, as happened. Now, we're on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, ladies and gentlemen, there are archives to this show and many others, and I encourage you to go there and check all of those out and donate if you can, or purchase some of the fine products from our very understanding, caring, and loving sponsors. It's a kind of like a family network. In fact, it literally is a family network. There's the Romero family that runs the whole boards and keeps the whale oil lamps burning behind the scenes. And well, basically, without your support, the wonderful listeners, the intelligent part of the truth movement, we hope, we would not exist. Thank you very much for all your support. Now, let's get to our guest. We have Danny Panzella. Danny, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
I'm very glad to have you here. Could you please elaborate just as to who you are and what it is you do?
Okay. Well, my name is Danny Panzella. I'm a native New Yorker, born and raised in New York City. And I do a lot of things. Currently, my active projects are the Peaceful Streets Project, New York City. So we're basically cop watching and doing Know Your Rights trainings, teaching people in New York City, especially the youth, how to stand up to the police assertively yet peacefully in a way that does not escalate a situation where they might be in danger of the police using their state-sanctioned violence on them. But we're, you know, trying to teach kids how to peacefully stand up for their rights and assert their rights so that the police cannot intimidate them into voluntarily surrendering their rights. That's one of my active projects.
May I ask, with cop watching, is it anything like bird watching? Like, do you have to have like a specific type of call like in order to attract them? You know, like, wee, wee. I'm kidding.
Well, we generally try not to attract the police. It's a good cop watching outing if we don't see any cops.
Well, what do you do? Do you spray yourself with mace or something and it acts as a cop repellent?
No, we just honestly we just kind of patrol the streets of hotspot areas, and if we see police activity, we videotape it. And what we're looking to do is encourage the community to do the same. The goal is really that if a cop stops somebody, that every witness in the area will pull out their cell phone and start video recording. And I like to say it this way. The NYPD has an extensive surveillance system in New York City, and I want to create an extensive We the People surveillance system, because when our surveillance system never has those inconvenient, technical difficulties, you know, like when a cop abuses someone or violates their rights and the video just happens to disappear, the camera...
Or Princess Diana goes along a route in France and 14 cameras simultaneously coincidentally fail.
Exactly. So with the We the People's surveillance system, if there's, you know, five or six witnesses and everybody whips out their cell phones and records it, then we've got full coverage of the event. You know, there's not going to be any lying on the stand.
You'd hope so, because you have a look at the guy who was beaten to death in Los Angeles, I believe, and everybody who pulled out their cell phones got them confiscated, and quite presumably the footage will get deleted.
That's true. One of the ways that we can avoid that is by live streaming directly to the internet while you're on your phone. You can use an app from Ustream or Livestream or Quick, and you can live stream right onto the internet, so that way there's always a video archive. Even if they delete it off the phone, the video still exists in the interwebs and can be retrieved later.
So when you do live stream, it actually records it as you're filming it and keeps it online, right?
Yes, it stores it on your online server, so people can watch it happening live. A lot of times it auto posts on Facebook and Twitter that you're broadcasting live, so people can watch it live, so you have, you know, a million more internet witnesses. And then at the same time, it archives the video as well, so that it's safe for later use.
That's ingenious.
Yeah, it's a great, we've developed a cop watching manual, so if any of your listeners are interested in doing this, you can go to Peaceful Streets NYC and download the manual, and I think the manual is pretty much universal. You can use it anywhere. You might have to tweak it according to the laws in your area, but for the most part, I think the philosophy that we put forth in the manual and the techniques we put forth in the manual are universal, that you can use them anywhere.
Yeah. I still think it'd be quite funny, you know, walking down New York Street and all of a sudden you hear those caw-caw, caw-caw. It was like somebody watching a cop.
I think people would, that's not a environmental sound you generally hear. I don't know if that's the way it is in Auckland, but in New York City, we don't really hear those kind of sounds. So that might sound out of place.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you could disguise yourself as a pimp or a heroin dealer or something, you know?
Right.
And if blend in with the background.
If that was the case, then we would have to be one of the NYPD sanctioned pimps or heroin dealers, because, you know, the NYPD acts as a kind of like a mafia enforcer, and they push out all the drug dealers and pimps that aren't sanctioned by the NYPD, but they let the ones that are sanctioned do business freely, as long as they pay their cut, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically extortionate racketeering and all of that kind of stuff, isn't it? You know, you can commit crimes, and we're the ones who are supposed to stop you from committing crimes, but hey, if you give us a cut of your crime and proceeds, that's fine.
Absolutely.
We'll use it to buy extra stuff that we can surveil innocent people with.
Right. Well, they learned this technique from the FBI and CIA.
Yeah. I had a realization about the CIA and FBI. If there's a terrorist attack that gets diverted and, the person gets arrested beforehand, before he commits the crime, it's usually set up by the FBI. But if there's a terrorist attack where they actually go through with it, it's usually set up by the CIA.
You know, that's a pretty good analysis. I think you're right on point with that one.
Yeah, my girlfriend walked into the house one time and she said, "Vinny, did you hear about this car bomb in Times Square?" I said, "Oh, don't worry, baby, it's probably just the FBI." And it was.
It's sick. It's really sick. But yeah, they have to justify their budgets.
How did you get into all of this, Danny? I mean, did you have a bad experience with some cops or something like that, messing you around and lying in the court or something?
No, not personally. I think that, you know, I got started in the movement via 9/11 Truth. So I started out with We Are Change New York City and Luke Gradowski down at Ground Zero, handing out pamphlets and DVDs, educating people about 9/11. And, you know, we used to get harassed by the cops quite often, and I guess that's probably where it was. You know, I'm a fairly intelligent guy, and I'm not intimidated by police, because I grew up, you know, in a very middle class area where there are a lot of cops. A lot of my family are cops, so I'm like, you know, when the cops would lie to me, I'm not like some uneducated person that I don't know they're lying, and I would just call them out. And I guess it kind of, maybe it's a little, I'm a little what's the word? I have maybe bravado because of my upbringing, and I just was like, "You're lying. You know, go try that on someone else who's going to believe you." And then I started to realize that this is a real technique that the police use. Is they're just trying to intimidate you. They will lie right to your face to intimidate you or to convince you to surrender your rights voluntarily. And that's why I said, you know what, I've got to start teaching people that maybe don't understand and don't know what their rights are, what their rights are, first of all, and how they can peacefully but assertively stand for those rights. So one of the things that we teach is when a cop approaches you and starts asking you questions, your first question is, am I being detained? If they say no, from that point forward, you just walk away. Because If they say no and you stay there and continue to have a conversation with them, you are now volunteering to be questioned. And anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. So we're teaching people to just walk away. If the cop does not let you walk away and says, yes, you are being detained, then your next response is, well, I'm sorry, officer, I don't answer questions without my attorney present. So, and at that point, the cop either has to arrest you and bring you in and get your attorney, or they'll decide to let you go. So it frustrates that process of them trying to intimidate you or coerce you into voluntarily submitting your rights and then answering whatever their questions are. Because no cop is your friend. They're not looking to have a conversation. Even if they're asking you for the time, they're not really looking to have a conversation. They're trying to ascertain probable cause or reasonable suspicion to search you. That way they can write you a summons or possibly arrest you to make their quotas. And regardless of what Ray Kelly and Mayor Bloomberg constantly say, that there are no quotas, they call them performance goals. Many, many whistleblowers have come out of the NYPD saying, yes, there are quotas. Yes, we were told we would be punished. We would be denied the tours we want. We'll be denied vacation days if we don't meet our quotas. So just the simple act of refusing to answer questions, pleading the Fifth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, can frustrate that whole process and stop it dead in its tracks.
I would love to interview one of these whistleblowers, Danny, if you could hook me up, bro.
Oh, absolutely. There's many of them. We hold one of the organizations I'm involved with, the Police Reform Organizing Project. We hold a forum every year, and it's called From Behind the Blue Wall of Silence. And we have about five or six retired NYPD detectives and captains who they'll quite openly talk about all of this. And, you know, some of them are minorities themselves. Some of them are African-American or Latino. And they talk about the fact that it doesn't matter if you're a cop, if you're black or Latino, because there is even the cops are racist against you. So it didn't matter as a police officer. One of the cops had said that there were several times he was attacked by police officers in the street while he was on duty. He wasn't in uniform. He was undercover. But because he was a black man and he had dreadlocks, he would be attacked by his fellow officers just because he was black. And then he would have to pull out his badge before they saw that he had a gun. Because if they saw he had a gun, they would assume it was an illegal gun and they might shoot him dead.
Yeah, see, apparently, if you're going to, what was it, Michael Moore, an episode of The Awful Truth, and he talked about how many black men are actually shot to death, like in their homes and things of that nature, by the trigger-happy NYPD for pulling out something like a cell phone or a chocolate bar or something of that nature. Sure. And he said that the way to avoid this from happening is to only eat Nutrageous Dayglow Orange Wrapper chocolate bars because it can't be mistaken for a gun.
Yeah. Well, it's a sad truth. I think that, unfortunately, the minority communities are just not strong enough to go up against the NYPD as hard as they fight. I think the NYPD takes full advantage of that. And until people stop complying with the police, because there's still a large portion of those communities that are very mainstream and they believe that, you know, the police should be respected and all this. And so they're not willing to really stand up and say, look, what you guys are doing. They make excuses. Oh, well, that was just one bad cop. Really? No, it's not just one bad cop. It's the racist system it's really based on racism, and the philosophy of the NYPD is completely wrong. And unfortunately, the NYPD serves as a model for police departments all over the planet.
Now, you've heard about the the bad apple philosophy. Oh, that one cop's just a bad apple. And in my opinion, it's actually just a bad barrel that corrupts good apples.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. That I 100% agree with. There are certainly police officers who get into it for the right reasons. They want to protect people. They want to, you know, keep people safe. And the system forces them, like with this quota system, the system forces them to do things they shouldn't be doing. So, for instance, the NYPD's own stop and frisk tactic, statistics rather, say that out of every 100 people that are stopped and frisked, only 6 are guilty of some sort of crime. Now, whether that's an infraction like holding a little bit of marijuana or a small knife or a weapon, or all the way up to, you know, having a gun on them or whatever it is. I don't have specifics on how many out of that six, what the nature of the crime is, but out of six, out of 100, only six are being written a ticket or arrested. So what that says is, and the police are supposed to be able to identify reasonable suspicion before they stop you. So that says to me that either the police are so poorly trained that they don't know what reasonable suspicion is, that they are wrong 94 times out of 100, or they're just stopping everyone who they feel like stopping because they think they're going to be able to write a summons to make their quota. And obviously, I believe it's the latter that is the truth. And even good cops, unfortunately, have to make their quotas, or they're punished, or because that's their paycheck, and they have to feed their family.
It's a sad world we live in, and it's run by corrupt scumbags. Danny Panzella is my guest, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
There's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest now live in living color is Danny Panzella, which incidentally rhymes with color. Welcome back.
Now, thanks for having me.
Cops. I don't know about... Have you ever been arrested before? Because I've been arrested twice. It's not pleasant. I mean, aside from the fact that you're having your liberty taken away from you, they take the liberty while they've got you to insult you and rough you up and all of this kind of stuff. They just seem like callous, evil men.
Yeah, I have been arrested a few times, and most of the times I was treated very disrespectfully, you know. Yeah, and I was arrested for silly little infractions. My license was suspended or expired, and so it's not like I was committing crimes. These are basically traffic violations that, you know, they've upped the penalties for. So now you have to go through an arrest just to make it inconvenient. So yeah, most times I was treated very disrespectfully, as if I was a hardcore criminal. It's ridiculous. There was one time that I was treated nicely by two cops, and I don't know if they were just stupid or overly nice and naive. I don't really know, but I was coming home from a Christmas party, and I probably, you know, I'm not really bragging about this, but I was coming home from a Christmas party and I was driving drunk, and I did have a suspended license at the time, and they pulled me over, and either they didn't realize I was drunk or they were trying to be really nice and not arrest me for being drunk, but they only arrested me for having a suspended license. But they actually let me drive my car, because we were on a highway, they let me drive my car to my uncle's house a few blocks away. So I can't imagine that they would have let me drive my car if they thought I was drunk, but for whatever reason, they did. I guess they just didn't realize it. That was probably the nicest treatment I've ever had by two police officers. And I didn't deserve it. That time, I didn't deserve it.
Well, I have this feeling as well that the police attract certain individuals to, you know, like the cliche, like if you were a bully at school, you go into the cops and things like that. I wonder if there's ever been a statistical analysis of currently employed police officers around the globe and whether or not they were, in fact, bullies back in high school.
I don't know if there's ever been a study, but I think that you're absolutely right. I like to say it. I don't know if we can use language on this show, but
we can't.
We can't. Okay. So what I like to usually would say is if you're not a jerk when you join the NYPD, the NYPD makes you a jerk. So, yeah, I think that a lot of people who want that kind of bully power, they want that badge, that shiny badge that gives them the state authority to be a bully, certainly join for that reason, because they get to have a gun and they get to push people around and I'm the law and you will respect me. There's a lot of people like that, that join the police. As a matter of fact, I heard a statistic one time and I've not been able to find the research to back it up, but I have heard the statistic that the two top professions in the United States for criminals, the first is being a teacher, and the second is being a police officer. And that's, there's more, I guess, more convictions of crimes in those two professions than any other professions.
Well, those are authority figures. And, you know, people generally respect, look up to, and follow the orders of authority figures, don't they? Which makes it perfect if you want to commit substantial quantities of crime.
Sure.
And not only is this a problem in the United States police force, I have a good friend here who's now a private investigator, 15-year prosecuting sergeant for the New Zealand police. She said to me, quote, "The New Zealand police are so corrupt, you will either leave or become corrupt."
Yeah, I mean, I think that's basically what the deal is. I mean, if anybody's ever seen the movie Serpico, that's based on a true story. Al Pacino played the character Frank Serpico, who was an actual detective who was trying to be a good cop. And what happened? They tried to assassinate him. They went into a drug bust and they let him go in first and nobody followed him in. The cops just let him go in by himself so he would get murdered by the drug dealers. He survived and now he's somewhere hiding in Europe. But yeah, the NYPD tried to kill one of their own for being a good cop.
That's freaking scary.
It is scary.
What other elements do you feel are most concerning about police behavior?
Well, I think that the thing that is most scary about it is that police violence is legal. It's allowed by the state. I mean, time after time, even the worst abuses, the cops just get let go free. Last summer, there was an incident where two NYPD police officers, the official story is they escorted a drunk girl home. She was drunk in a bar. They escorted her home. Well, it turns out that one of the cops stood outside and the other cop brought her upstairs and was up there for 2 hours. And the next day she claimed the cop raped her. Well, for 2 hours, now the cop's story was he fell asleep and took a nap. Now, does that make sense? A cop on duty brings a drunk girl home and takes a nap in her apartment, and next day she says he raped her? Well, they both got off with no penalty at all.
Especially the one who raped her. Did he get off?
Yeah. Oh, I don't even want to touch that one. But yeah, I mean,
she didn't either.
Even the most egregious, you know, abuses of power, these cops let go free because the society will side with them. And of course, the system they come from, the state, the judges, the prosecutors, that whole system works together. So of course, they're going to get off. And that is really the scariest thing. And that's why I don't believe voting is going to change it. You're not going to elect somebody who's going to come in and change the whole system, because either if you try to change the system either changes or kills you or throws you out. The change has to come from the grassroots. It has to come from people standing up and saying, I know my rights and I'm not going to allow you to violate my rights no matter what. And even if that means, you know, ultimately putting ourselves in physical danger, then that's eventually where we're going to have to go with this. But for right now, I think it's a matter of just educating as many people as possible about their rights and the importance of standing up for those rights and not giving them up, even the small ones.
You know, that reminds me of what the Black Panthers did way back in the day is they're armed. and they'd see police beating up unarmed black men, and they'd run at them, point the guns at the cops and say, stop beating this unarmed man. And they'd stop beating them, you know? And,
yeah.
And so now nobody in New York is allowed any guns because, hey, you'd be able to defend yourself against the cops.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, I laugh at the Tea Party as a whole because they're very in support of the police. And the police is the front line. I mean, they're terrified of the government. Oh, we don't want big government. Obama's going to put us in, you know, he's going to oppress us and all this. He's going to become a dictator. And I can agree with him. I mean, I think all presidents are dictators. But they don't want to disarm the cops and they don't realize the cops are going to be the first line. The first people that come for them when Obama becomes a dictator are going to be the NYPD. So you need to be armed to protect yourself from the NYPD. We recently had right after the Sandy Hook shooting, we had a New York State gun ban passed that banned assault rifles and bullet clips over a certain amount, I think 8 or 9 bullets per clip. And there was this big outrage because the cops were not exempted from the ban. And, well, the cops need to have big clips. It's okay if we the people don't have big clips, but the cops need to have it. I said, what are you people thinking? This is what the Tea Party response was. So what are you people thinking? You're saying you want your oppressors to have more bullets than you do. That makes no sense. That's contrary to the Second Amendment. So unfortunately, this is a deep kind of probably an American way of thinking, you know, Uncle Sam and Superman and truth, justice in the American way. People still believe that the police stand for that, that the Pentagon stands for that, that Washington, D.C., even though it's corrupt, it's better than any other country. So it still stands for that. But it's not true. I don't believe it ever was true. I believe that was just the propaganda. That was an image that was put forth to get the mass of people behind it, to support this corrupt, evil, racist, oppressive system and class-driven oppressive system.
Yeah, and that's what the Second Amendment was actually for, is to protect the people from the government turning tyrannical. And in fact, doesn't it even specifically state that the people should be just as well armed as the national military?
Well, I mean, from my reading of it, that's what I would say. Yeah. As a matter of fact, constitutionally speaking, there really isn't even supposed to be a standing military. So the only armed people should be the citizens. There aren't supposed to be professional soldiers or really even cops, I would argue. They're supposed to be the militia is supposed to be all of the adults of the county. So in times of war, you would just call each militia from each county. We need to go to war. But back then, there weren't really wars like we're fighting today, where we're going to foreign countries to fight wars. It was a matter of defending our borders. That's the way it's supposed to be. Non-interventionist foreign policy would say, well, we just build up our borders and be able to defend ourselves if another country attacks us. We don't need to have professional troops that we can send to this country or to that country to occupy. And that's how we get entangled, and it causes all kinds of other problems, like blowback, which lead to things like 9/11.
Yeah, and the Founding Fathers also warned against entangled alliances and allegiances and things of that nature as well, because, well, basically, you know, if somebody else from overseas is your ally, you've got to go and support them. So basically, it takes away your personal choice of whether or not you want to enter conflicts just because your ally comes in, you know?
That's right.
And that's a similar thing that's happening here. And on that point, Adam Kokesh, his recent arrest, because we're talking about being armed in order to protect yourself from the cops. And so here we have a activist who is wanting to do an armed, peaceful rally, being black bagged by the cops and taken away. And now we have protests that occurred earlier today outside the courthouse in Philly. And I think what's really scaring me here is that they really can just disappear you. And I'm not 100% sure whether or not any amount of protesting will help, because those protesters aren't armed or willing to use those arms.
Sure.
and whereas the cops are, and they are willing to use them.
Yeah, of course. Well, they've got the full force of the state behind them, so of course they're willing to use them. I think that we the people are much more cautious when it comes to using or resorting to violence, even defensive violence, because we know that even raising arms against the government will bring, you know, it'll bring the full force of that weight of the state down on top of us. So, you know, yeah, I mean, I support Adam. I support the idea for his rally. I think, and I hope that the Tea Party will get on board and march with him. I want to see, you know, I would love to see 10,000 or 50,000 or even 1 million. I mean, I think that's probably a stretch, but I'd love to see that amount of people march down there peacefully. And the weapons don't need to be loaded necessarily, but just as a symbolic show that, look, we're going to exercise our rights. This is, again, it's a peaceful but assertive exercise of our God-given rights. Forget about the Constitution. There's plenty of tyranny that's written into the Constitution, but it's a matter of exercising our God-given right to defend ourselves any way we choose.
Now, defending your rights doesn't necessarily have to come to the point where it's the barrel of the gun. Like, that's the last step in defending your rights. And the first step is just using your words and knowing your enemy. And I don't think people realize the cops are your enemy, okay, in the vast majority of cases. And people don't trust police and because they can't be trusted. And that, and inherently, is a really bad thing. Police should be trustworthy. Police should be honest. Police should be decent. Way back in the day, in England, and the Bobby on the street type of police work was able to keep public order extraordinarily well. Crime was next to nothing, and the cops were armed with a pen and a notepad. And most importantly of all, they were armed with community spirit. Police would go into local shops, talk to the shopkeepers and ask them how they're doing, ask them how their family is and things of that nature. Now it's not about that at all. The only time a cop's going to come into your shop is if you've either been robbed and they're going to come in and say, well, I don't think we're going to be able to catch the guy, or if they're coming in to rob you.
Well, it's a good point, and that's one of the things that we advocate for as Peaceful Streets Project and some of the other organizations is what we call community-based policing. Currently, the way police are assigned is when you come out of the academy. Now, just picture this. You're 22, 23 years old. You come out of the academy. They strap a gun to your hip. You're brand new on the street. They pair you up with a senior officer, and they place you in one of the high crime areas, quote unquote, to break you in. So the majority of cops coming out of the academy are going to be white, and they're putting them in black neighborhoods and telling them everyone on the street is an animal, and you need to make sure you get home alive to your girlfriend, wife, your mother. So shoot first, ask questions later.
We'll
make
right
sure
back,
you protect your life.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen, do me a favor, smash the television and burn the newspaper. That shit will never tell you that the president's a traitor. Believe what you want, but my evidence is greater. What you know about the Bilderberg and New World Order? What you know about the real fluoride in your water? What you know about the bleed of uranium in the mortar? What you know about AIPAC controlling the reporter? What's wrong with the world? People kill people that other people command. Middle
Welcome
East
back.
Is a modern day attack on the native land project.
Welcome back, everybody. That's Genocide. They're genocidewrap.com. Fracking awesome musician. He sent me one of his albums, and generally I don't like rap, but if they're rapping about the New World Order and exposing scumbaggery, it ain't nothing more awesome than that, I got to say. And we were talking about cops, and I remember having a conversation with Dr. Green once. He started up this big cannabis club here in Auckland. It's since been shut down. And we talked about how the cops and the government lie all the time, in order to enforce their laws. And because their laws are a lie, and it just occurs to me that they've got to train these people to be really, really good liars. And that's because you can't enforce laws that are lies unless you're a trained liar. And this is actually one of the pet issues for you, isn't it, the cannabis issue?
Yeah, it's actually a fairly new issue for me. And my mom, what actually woke me up, I guess, was my mom passed away from breast cancer about 6 years ago. And when she passed away, she was very young. She was only 55. I went into like a deep depression. And I just kind of, I moved into my friend's basement and I isolated myself and just kind of, I didn't care about anything. I didn't care about politics. Before that, I really was kind of mildly interested in politics, but I wasn't like, you know, really. And somebody handed me Zeitgeist while I was in that depression, or told me to watch it. And I watched it, and it was like I got addicted to watching internet documentaries. So I started watching The Obama Deception and all these different films. Well, one of the things that I had kind of barely been starting to research just before my mom passed away was holistic medicine and alternative cures, because she was on chemo and radiation and it was killing her. I was watching her die. And so I was trying to get more information, but it was pretty much too late for her, and she really wasn't that open to it. But it's something that I continued. And then I saw American Drug War, a film by Kevin Booth. And he barely touches on it. And then I just started to do more research. Well, his new film, before I get to the new film, then I read an article in High Times magazine. And it was about Dr. William Courtney and who is now his wife, but just one of his patients at the time, Kristen Pazuski. This girl had all kinds of crazy lupus and all kinds of crazy diseases. I mean, she literally she couldn't really get out of bed. She couldn't have kids. She was like, they told her, you're not going to live past 25. And she was on all these pain meds. Well, one day she's on vacation and she runs out of her meds and she can't get more. So one of her friends says, here, try this. Smoke a joint. It'll help you with your pain. It'll help you relax. So I guess for about a week, she was smoking and a lot of her infections started to go away and some of her medical problems started to recede. So she was like, oh, wow, what's happening here? Well, that's how she got hooked up with Dr. Courtney. So Dr. Courtney was doing research about the cannabinoids and how they interact. We actually have cannabinoid receptors in our brain. And there's this whole slew of research that I got exposed to. And I was like, wow, this is phenomenal. Now, I was never, as a libertarian, I said, you know, we definitely should legalize weed. Anybody, you have the right to smoke whatever you want. But I'm not a pot smoker really myself. And so I didn't really care about the issue. I wasn't active about it as an activist. But when I came across this information, I said, my God, this is stuff that can help anybody, because whether you have health issues or not, we all have allergies, we all have different things. And eating raw cannabis, and there's no psychoactive effect, so you don't get high from eating it raw, can help anyone. And I said, this is how we are going to legalize marijuana on a grand scale, is by showing people this information that you don't have to get high, and it's going to open up to a whole new world of people who don't want to get high, but maybe recognize the fact that we can now use it basically as a vegetable, that it really is a vegetable. It should be consumed as a vegetable, and the amazing health benefits that come from it. So now, fast forward a couple of years, and I decided I was going to make a film on it. Kevin Booth is coming out with his new film, American Drug War II, and he is focused in this film on the cancer research. He's focused on Dr. Courtney's research and other doctors, Rick Simpson's work with hemp oil curing or at least treating cancer, certainly much more effectively than traditional allopathic medicine with chemo or radiation. And it's really a very powerful film. So right now I'm helping to organize the New York City premiere. It's something that I'm very excited about, getting this information out. I'm still in pre-production on my film, which is going to focus more, not so much on cancer, but just on kind of helping the everyday person nutritionally with cannabis to become a healthier person, to avoid cancer. It's more like preventative holistic medicine is what I'm focusing on, because I really want to reach out to kind of the whole holistic, the vegans, the vegetarians, that section of our culture, so that if I can get them on board with the legalization movement, we can really move the ball down the road, and maybe we can legalize in New York the same way they just did in Colorado and Washington. I mean, that would be fabulous. I cannot wait for the day that I can just grow cannabis in my backyard alongside my tomatoes and just be able to eat it like the vegetable, like I really believe we were meant by God to do. And so if you're interested in the film, you can go to AmericanDrugWar2.com and check it out. And you can pre-order it right now on iTunes, and it comes out June 6th. And it's really a powerful film. I was able to preview it the other day before I interviewed Kevin for my blog, which is TrueSquad.tv. So you can check that out if you want to see the interview. And I literally cried through the whole film because the information is just, it's literally life-saving. And one of the main stories in the film is a little boy, a two-year-old boy named Cashy Hyde, who had a brain tumor, and his parents were secretly treating him. This kid is in the hospital, and his parents are secretly treating him with hemp oil, and the doctors cannot figure out why his brain tumor keeps shrinking. And then, unfortunately, things just kept happening legislatively. They banned marijuana. They legalized it, and then they repealed the legalization in their home state, so they couldn't get the hemp oil, so the tumor came back. And literally, drug laws murdered this child because he was being healed by hemp oil, and then they kept just making it impossible for his parents to be able to get that hemp oil to heal him or to keep him on a regimen to keep his brain tumor from coming back. And eventually, it did take his life. And it's really a heartbreaking story to know that there's probably a million other people, not just children, but people in general that could be benefiting from these cures that the U.S. government is patenting. They are patenting cannabinoids. They are patenting strains of marijuana, the U.S. government. But yet they say it has no medical value and they won't allow people to just use it. And it is sickening and it makes me angry. And this is why I'm really, this is one of my core issues alongside with the Peaceful Streets Project. This is the two, these are the two issues that I'm really focused on right now.
Mm-hmm. And you talked about how the cops are bust a whole lot of people and don't find anything on 94% of them. And I'm just thinking, you know, on that 6%, you know how many people smoke marijuana? It's like, what, one in eight or something of that nature? So I can probably guarantee you that a substantial portion of that only six people that actually have something illegal on them, so on and so forth, will be cannabis users. And I think that's the real problem here with cannabis in general, is because it's so widely used, so therefore it can be widely used as an excuse to frack with people's rights.
Yes, and I agree. I think probably out of that six people that are being arrested, most likely it is for cannabis. And it's just a sad fact that we're being arrested for a plant, and it's just insane. And especially if you consider that before 1932, cannabis was not illegal. So for all that time, everybody used cannabis. Doctors had cannabis oils in their medical bag when they would make house calls. I mean, they were using this. And then in 1932,
Harry J. Anslinger.
Yes, but I forget the name of what's the name of the agency? It was before, you know, now it's called the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agency. But whatever Anslinger was running, I forget the name of his agency. When alcohol became legal again, he had nothing to do and he was going to have to fire his whole staff. So he said, well, let's go after marijuana. And they started using the Spanish word for it and blaming Mexicans and saying, oh, it's this devil weed marijuana from Mexico. It's not like the stuff that we've been using in the United States. It's horrible. It's terrible. And they started, he was friends with Hearst, and they started a propaganda war about marijuana. And that's it. And the rest is history. So I'm actually going to include a lot of that in the film because I want people to understand the history of how marijuana became illegal to begin with, to see that it's really just a farce. It's really just, again, like every other thing that we're dealing with the police state in our modern lifetime. Back then, they were dealing with the same thing. It's about budgets. It's about justifying jobs. And it's Dr. Melamed in the film, he says that marijuana prohibition is welfare for law enforcement. And that's really, I can't say it better than that.
All right. Danny Panzella, thank you so much for coming on the show today. And I would love it if you could give out your website now, just for those who would be interested in looking at more of your work.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. My website is truthsquad.tv, or you can check out peacefulstreetsnyc.com. Thank you so much for having me on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that's cool, man. And I would love to you to get me in contact with those NYPD whistleblowers that you mentioned.
Absolutely.
And I've been dying to interview Kevin Booth for a number of years as well, and I haven't even gotten around to it. So his contact details would be very much obliged as well, man. Thanks
Absolutely.
So much.
No problem.
What a legend. Okay. All right, ladies and gentlemen, you've got cannabinoid receptors in your body, and when they are activated, the Dorito receptors also activate. So thank you very much for coming on the show. All right. Okay, and we'll be back next hour with another fabulous guest. Danny, it's been an honor and a privilege, my son. Thank you.
The virus, alert the masses.